the energy there was terrific. It reminded me enough of the International Eucharistic Congress in 2012.
It had echoes of that?
Very much so. I mean, from a liturgy point of view, the Eucharistic Congress was 8 days, so that was like a marathon of work. Whereas the World Meeting of Families was a 3.5 day event, if you want to put it that way, because it opened up with the opening evening prayer on the Tuesday. And then each day we had a morning prayer, a series of prayer events going on, and then culminating in the celebration of the Eucharist in Leinster's rugby ground in the RDS, which was logistically a big one to ask, but I had a great team of people, huge number of volunteers. A lot of them were veterans from the Eucharistic Congress.
I was going to say, I imagine that the Eucharistic Congress was a dry run almost for this.
It was. If I didn't have that, I would have been really in trouble. I just remembered a lot of my mistakes from the previous time, so as to try and make sure that things went well. I mean, there was a different atmosphere,
there was a different dynamic to it, was there?
I suppose the dynamic of the Church in Ireland has moved on since 2012.
But that's only 6 years, really, so the change has been quite significant, really, isn't it?
I think the age group was much younger. About 28% of the people who were registered for the RDS were under the age of 18.
Now, this is obviously for the World Meeting of Families.
For the World Meeting of Families, yes. So immediately the whole dynamic is going to be different. So there was a whole children's prayer space, a youth prayer space, all sorts of prayer events and interaction with them that was based on the particular needs of their development, as well as then the major celebrations of morning prayer, adoration and the Eucharist.
It was a bit like a revival maybe in the sort of the Protestant context in the United States. Had a bit of that flavour of it.
I don't know if it was a revival, but certainly the energy and the joy that was brought to Ireland from the Universal Church was tremendous. I mean, to see all these different language groups and different cultural groups, some of them actually in sort of national costume or in like gears specially made out for the occasion, like with, you know, the name of the country, like Mexico or Canada or whatever it is, but that they're prepared to take their holidays, come and share with us and celebrate with us the presence of God in their own families and wanting to discover what particular angles or wisdom or fruits of knowledge that we might have to share with them too.
Do you feel that given like the trauma, if you like, that the church, wider church, I'm talking about lay and consecrated, have come through, that this was a great way to reassure people that the church is very alive and very vibrant?
If you look at the life of the early church, they had their own traumas as well too. They had all sorts of meetings and gatherings to address really issues that were tearing them apart, or, you know, there was talking points and struggles that they had about where is God calling us. But the certainty is God is still calling us, God is still leading us, God is always faithful, and that's the bedrock. And from there then we're given the hope and the courage to go out and live.
And again, if you look at recent history, I suppose in Ireland, that there was a time when nobody was going to Mass and the church was really on its knees and it had come back in full strength. So these things, I suppose, the pendulum, would you say the pendulum can swing?
Of course it can swing. I mean, if you look at, again, the scriptures, as people, when people come towards the Lord and then they sort of drift away and they come back, there's always moments of rediscovering anew the beauty of God's call to us. But also one of the fascinating things was even in the Phoenix Park. I know there's a lovely lady who comes to Mass most mornings where I celebrate in Ballygall, 7:25 in the morning. We had about 70 people there. And she said, I was by far the oldest person in my chorale. She said, the chorale of about 1,100 people. And she said, I was by far the most senior citizen, if you want to put it that way, in that chorale. They were all young families. And this gave her great hope for the future that we never know. A lot of the people, I suppose, who had tickets were scared off by the length of walks that were advertised and have been discussed on media and stuff like that, but also the weather on the day was atrocious. As this old guards from Galway used to say to me, you wouldn't put an iron gauge out on a day like that, you know. It was pretty atrocious in the morning. So I'd say some people said, I'll watch this and I'll pray it at home. But the majority of people who did turn up were young families, and that was an extraordinary thing, to see young faces there present at the Eucharist.
I mean, there were a lot of people who wouldn't have normally gone to church and they would have made a big effort to be there, because this was a big moment to have a second pope in Ireland in the space of 40 years.
Yeah, I suppose for a country as small as ourselves, yeah, it was extraordinary. But even I was watching, there was a programme on RTÉ there, sort of the behind the scenes look at the visit, and there was one point where a lot of volunteers were getting on a bus here in Clonmacnoise College about 5 o'clock in the morning to go and work as volunteers. And again, the vast majority of the people on that bus were under 25. That was my experience as well too. About 8:30 in the morning, I walked about a kilometre from the Pope's Cross to the furthest communion chapel where we were consecrating the Eucharist for distribution among the faithful later on at the Mass. There was a husband and wife team, he's a permanent deacon with his wife, and then there was about 15 young people, and they were between the ages of about 16 and 20. And there at 8:30 in the morning, hours and hours and hours before the event, they were there willing to help their assistants. And I said, well, we're going to pray the Eucharist now, and if anybody wants to leave and I'll continue a chat. But they all stayed. So there was also the little moments of like that where you see hope for the future and you see, well, perhaps we are seeing seeds here that will bear fruit in, you know, decades and generations to come.
How do you see our church, if you like, reacting now going forwards? What, you know, leveraging, if you like, that, taking advantage of that goodwill. How do you see it being taken up? What initiatives do you feel could happen or should happen?
But I think we can look at the freshness with which Pope Francis presents our faith. And I remember Archbishop Martin's words, opening words to of welcome at that papal mass in the Phoenix Park. We said, you know, Peter, come and strengthen our faith. You're coming to strengthen our faith. And it's about encouragement, it's about accompaniment, but it's also about the way in which Pope Francis finds such a fresh and wise and human way of opening anew for us the treasures of the gospel. I hope that that will, again, it's not something we'll see an instant kickback from. I think it's something that, in the same way as I have treasured memories of 79 and the sort of the direction that could have steered my life into. I was there as an altar boy. Well, I was an altar boy in my own local parish, but we all went together. And it was only, you know, about 2 miles from my own family home where I was born. So, but I remember the impact that had on me. And maybe it's not something that you carry consciously. Maybe it's just something within, a germ, a seed within. And I think, please God, in future generations, we'll see the fruits of that moment of joy and of celebration will bear fruit for future generations.
You mentioned the Eucharist earlier on, and there was a very positive sense of, I suppose, communion, common union, if you like, around the Eucharist. Is that something maybe that you could use going forwards to lead the church?
I think I remember somebody, I remember talking to somebody who remained nameless, who wouldn't often go to celebrate the Eucharist, but made the effort to turn up with their family, and who said to me, there was something noble and very beautiful and reverent about that today, even though it was such a huge crowd and in the park. And that's what they found really impressive. And this is where I hope that the way we celebrate will be something beautiful for God. Perhaps that's a lesson that we can take. I suppose my wish and my dream for all the liturgies around the world meeting of families would they be something beautiful for God. And if we can do that, and then our worship is that, well then the radiant attractiveness of God and the eternal beauty of God, that will draw people and it will change people's understanding and vision for their own lives and the future.
What about for you personally, in the sense of you were there for the first pope, his visit, second pope now as well. On a personal level, that must have been amazing.
It is a kind of extraordinary. I mean, in 79, the scale was absolutely colossal.
But things were more easygoing,
yeah,
were they?
In terms of the words like health and safety weren't there. And, and, you know, I remember talking to a priest who said literally he drove to the Phoenix Park that morning in 79. Nobody was getting anywhere close to that, you know, not within a 4 kilometre radius, really, of that this time round, with health and safety and fears of a transport and blockages and stuff like that. Yet the logistics were, they were kind of, I suppose, to be on the logistics side of things and trying to organise things and trying to make sure everything goes well.
Did you feel that you were overwhelmed, if you like, by the organisation side of it, that you weren't able to engage as much, perhaps, in at this time?
It was something I could pray through, definitely, and I could really enjoy the prayer moment of being led in the Eucharist by Peter, if you want to put it that way, with us. I suppose once the liturgy starts, it has its own momentum, and it's taking place, and you're trying to spot possible things where things go wrong and nip them in the bud. If that was the case, that wasn't really the case. The weather was something we could steal up on the sanctuary. There was very strong winds. Myself and Monsignor Guido Marini, who's the maestro of the Master of Ceremonies for the Holy Father, we had to staple down the altar cloths at about 2:10 because of the wind and the rain in and around the sanctuary less than an hour before the Eucharist.
So you're going around with a Hilti gun almost.
Well, there was part of a team there from Arcana, who are a production company, and they were helping us, yeah. But yet it was something that I could pray through. And you always know that if you can pray through a liturgy, even if things aren't going perhaps an optimal point of view from the point of view of weather, that, yeah, God is there.
One notable change from the 1979 visit in terms of the face of the church, the leadership of the church, is we have a permanent diaconate now. Mm. And sitting beside the Pope during the Mass throughout the whole thing actually was a permanent deacon. That's a big change. And one of the, as you mentioned earlier on, a married deacon who joined you earlier on. That's an interesting change.
It is an interesting one. It's something that's been, I suppose, a gift of the church in other dioceses for a long time. In Ireland, we've had them since about, it was 2012, I think, it was the first time we had permanent deacons here in Dublin. And that definitely is a gift of the church. It was very powerful for Noel, who read the gospel for us. His son, very tragically, died in Phoenix Park while doing a fun run a couple of years ago. And it just felt like a movement of the Spirit where we, in trying to choose someone to proclaim the gospel at the Pope's Mass, where we asked Noel, would he do it? And I know his wife was there and family members were there. So it meant a huge amount to them to be in the same park where their son had died a couple of years earlier and to be able to proclaim the gospel at the Pope's Mass. It was, I know it was a great moment for him and his family.